From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Imagine yourself these past years in Syria. Your kids protest a brutal government and are tortured. Your town is barrel-bombed and starved. ISIS moves in or close. Life is hell. You want to flee. Millions have. And since last summer, a surge to Europe. Now the attacks in Paris are raising alarm. American governors are jumping on board. Ted Cruz says, take Christians only. President Obama says that's shameful. This hour, On Point, humanity, security, and Syria's refugees. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What is the right thing to do here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Republican presidential candidates ready to jump all over the door and close it.
To bring tens of thousands of Syrian Muslim refugees to America, I think, is absolute lunacy.
Is this a Trojan horse? We all know the story of the Trojan horse.
We have a responsibility to help with refugees after proper screening, and I think our focus ought to be on the Christians who have no place in Syria anymore.
President Obama announced at his press conference that it was our responsibility to accept these refugees. He is wrong.
Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, Jeb Bush, Ben Carson there, and here at the G20 summit in Turkey yesterday, President Obama.
Slamming the door in their faces would be a betrayal of our values. Our nations can welcome refugees who are desperately seeking safety and ensure our own security. We can and must do both.
We can and must do both, says the president. Joining me first today from New York is Kyle Blaine, deputy politics editor and reporter at BuzzFeed. He's been covering U.S. moves on Syrian refugees since the Paris attacks. You can link to his stories at our website, onpointradio.org. Kyle Blaine, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
The latest I have seen is 26 U.S. governors now saying either no, some of them, or we want more information before we take more Syrian refugees. Is there any change at this point, formally, in U.S. policy on Syrian refugees so far?
No, actually, the White House told me yesterday in a statement that they are going to stand by their policy, that they wouldn't have committed to 10,000 refugees if they didn't think that they could properly vet them. So they're definitely standing by the policy that they laid out in September to take 10,000 refugees from Syria specifically in 2016.
We're going to hear from a congressman in just a moment who says no thanks to that. Europe has had, what, almost 500,000 come in recent months. 10,000 seems small by comparison. What about the process by which refugees come to the U.S. versus what we've seen in Europe since the summer, Kyle?
Well, I mean, it's very clearly different for one reason, and that's geography. Refugees from Syria are not actually knocking on our door as they are in Europe. Also, the vetting procedure is just completely different. A lot of European countries will accept refugees from Syria based on a case file. The U.S. has a much more extensive system. They do require an in-person interview with the Department of Homeland Security. They do run these refugees' names and fingerprints through every security check that the U.S. has, essentially. And a lot of the information, a lot of the screening information that they do with Syrian refugees specifically is classified. There's a lot of extra measures that the public doesn't know about. So they are extensively vetted, especially compared to what they do in European countries.
I mean, there have been times it looked as though coming into Europe through Greece and all that we saw, there was almost no vetting. On Fox News Sunday, Chris Wallace asked Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes, you may have heard this, Kyle, who was in Turkey for the summit there, whether the U.S. would change its policy on accepting Syrian refugees, how they were handling that. Here he was.
No, Chris, we're still planning to take in Syrian refugees. We have very robust vetting procedures for those refugees. It involves our intelligence community, our National Counterterrorism Center, extensive interviews, vetting them against all the available information.
But you had Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio, presidential contender, saying can't be done.
The problem is we can't background check them. You can't pick up the phone and call Syria. And that's one of the reasons why I've said we won't be able to take more refugees. It's not that we don't want to. It's that we can't, because there's no way to background check someone that's coming from Syria. Who do you call and do a background check on them?
Kyle Blaine, what is happening at this point with governors? Many of them are saying, hold on. How many are saying no? Can they say no? I mean, does the state have anything to do with the process?
Well, yeah, so the state It is. I tried to get an answer from the government yesterday about what their sort of legal opinion is on what the states can do. I didn't get a clear one, but talking to most of the refugee agencies, the resettlement agencies in the United States, it's a federal program. They cannot stop the federal government from placing a refugee in their state. What the states can do and what some of them have done is just said, we're not going to cooperate at all. Actually, the governor of Florida and the governor of Idaho wrote in their letter, actually acknowledged in their letter, we don't have authority to stop you from doing this. We're asking you to not do this, and we're asking our agency, we're instructing our agencies not to cooperate. So it is a federal program. The states can't enforce a ban on Syrian refugees, but they can certainly make it difficult. And talking to some people yesterday in the refugee resettlement community, if a state is requesting that the government, the Department of State, not send Syrian refugees their way, it's likely the Department of State's going to honor that request because they're not going to want to send a refugee to a state that doesn't want them.
And suddenly, just in the last day, we've got a bunch of legislation introduced by Republicans largely on Capitol Hill that would, here's one bill that would block federal funding for resettling Syrian refugees until they've got new conditions out there. There's a report of that. Have you heard anything on it, Kyle?
Yeah, so Senator Jeff Sessions wrote a letter yesterday saying that he's urging, and other Republicans as well are urging to attach the Syrian refugee issue to an appropriation bill, a government funding bill. And I think that this is really where you're going to see the fight over the Syrian refugee policy actually take shape in the next month or so. It remains to be seen how that will play out in the Senate or in the House. But there's definitely a push in Congress to have an up or down vote on whether the Obama administration would have the funding to take in 10,000 Syrian refugees.
Kyle Blaine, Deputy Politics Editor, reporter at BuzzFeed, with us from New York. Kyle, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's go to Texas right now. And Republican Congressman Blake Farenthold represents Texas' 27th District, includes the Gulf Coast, Corpus Christi, Ocampo, Lockhart, Moore. Congressman Farenthold in Washington, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for joining us.
Howdy, Tom.
I see reporting that you have signed on to this draft legislation that would cut off funding for bringing in Syrian refugees. Is that right, sir?
It is. I think we're going to try to get something out of the House of Representatives this week saying we need to stop this Syrian refugee program. And I think, though, actually the way it's going to get done is through cutting off funding. We could pass a bill saying don't let any Syrian refugees in, and I'd bet my bottom dollar President Obama would veto it.
The scenes from Paris are terrible. They're wrenching. But is this a kind of a gut reaction? Washington says, the federal government says, these are carefully vetted refugees. They spend a couple of years vetting them before they come over. This is not the same as the hundreds of thousands that have flowed into Europe over the summer. Would you be cutting off a program that's pretty well put together, Congressman? Is that?
I'm not going to accept those facts. The House Judiciary Committee, we had the FBI director who admitted there's no good fingerprint database or good identification. They have no information to vet them against. You know, Syria is all but a failed state, and we don't have the data collected on the ground in Syria to tell the good guys from the bad guys from the really bad guys.
Ted Cruz and Jeb Bush, in his way, have said, well, we understand there are problems there. Let's just take Christians. What do you think of that, Congressman?
I think that would be a violation of our First Amendment, a separation of church and state. I don't think a person's religion ought to be, but I do think their country of origin is worth taking a look at. And let's take a look at the refugee problem overall. Why are we taking the folks in the middle, the reasonable, rational people who aren't extremists on either side, who aren't fighting them, resettling them in Europe and the United States, when there'll be nobody to rebuild a government in Syria?
I mean, I get what you're saying. On the other hand, if it was your family or mine there, barrel bombs coming down, people tortured all over the place, and ISIS marching in, you might want to get out of there.
I think I would be looking for a way out, too. I will admit that. But the fact of the matter is, U.S. policy has failed over there, and we can go back and cast blame all we want, but we've got to look ahead and come up with a solution to where we really do what the president says he wants to do and stop ISIS. The NDAA Congress is sending up to the White House here this week is going to require the president to come up with a plan and present it to Congress on how we're going to defeat ISIS and not just talk about it.
What do you think that's going to take, sir?
I think it's going to take increased military action. I think as a result of the attacks in Paris, we've got our European allies more on board than ever. And I think this is a unique opportunity in history for President Obama to create a coalition worldwide of nations committed to ridding the world of the scourge of terrorism.
You've seen, like I have, those mothers and grandmothers coming ashore in tears in Greece, the drowned dead toddler on the beach. Do you really have the heart to just say no?
I think we need to, the Arab states and the countries in the region need to come up with a solution to where these refugees are nearby and can return home to rebuild their country in peace when we've defeated ISIS.
I don't know. You think people will look back if this goes through, if this stop goes through and people are suffering there, you think people will, and you know what's happening when ISIS takes over and they've taken over a lot, there's all kinds of hell to pay. You know, might we look back in shame if we don't help people at the moment when they're really up against it?
I'm looking back at shame of our pulling out of Iraq so soon and allowing ISIS to metastasize in the region.
That's the shame in your eyes.
Yes.
Congressman Blake Farenthold represents the 27th District in Texas, Republican. Thank you very much for joining us today, Congressman.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Syria's refugees after the Paris attacks, where they'll go, where they won't, and what is the right thing to do here. You can join us. Should Europe keep its doors open? Should the United States? Can we be humane and security conscious? What if it was your family in the boat, desperate? Would you understand a closed door? And what if the threat of ISIS infiltration is real in Europe, in the U.S.? What should be done here? What's the danger of overreaction, of underreaction? We're going to go to Europe in just a moment. Ted Cruz has said, Christians only. Jeb Bush has said something similar. President Obama responded to that in Turkey yesterday.
When I hear folks say that, well, maybe we should just admit the Christians, but not the Muslims. When I hear political leaders suggesting that there would be a religious test for which person who's fleeing from a war-torn country is admitted? When some of those folks themselves come from families who benefited from protection when they were fleeing political persecution? That's shameful. That's not American. That's not who we are. We don't have religious tests to our compassion.
The president there yesterday with an unnamed jab at Ted Cruz, whose own family came from Cuba. In Europe, very hot issue right now. Here's Marine Le Pen, president of France's far-right National Front, telling NPR's Robert Siegel yesterday that France should not accept any more refugees, interpreted by NPR.
Personally, I believe that reason dictates that we leave these people in Syria or in Jordan in humanitarian camps where they would be safe. But to attract them into Europe, as Madame Merkel did, in my opinion, is madness.
We'll look more at the American situation. I want to look at Europe as well. Ryan Heath joins us right now from Brussels. He is senior EU correspondent for Politico Europe. Ryan Heath, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
And from Geneva, Switzerland, Leonard Doyle is here, spokesperson for the International Organization of Migration. Leonard Doyle, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Tom.
Ryan Heath, is action being taken yet? Is policy changing in Europe on Syrian refugees?
I don't think that you see new policy since the attacks on Paris, but you obviously see a much more tense debate, essentially. When you have a zone for free movement of people, when you have a free market for goods and services, then obviously that does make it possible for illegal arms to travel more easily. It does make it possible for criminals to travel more easily. And I think that we're still in the sort of the raw afterthrows of the event. So you definitely do see governments like the Polish governments say they want to throw up the border, they want to issue religious tests, they are getting tougher in their rhetoric. But it's too early to see an actual new policy or a new law on the table as a result. It's a very tense debate.
You're raising Europe's open borders immediately, which goes to the very identity of the European Union. Can we just pause for a moment over the facts of the case here and the passport found near the body of a suicide bomber in Paris on Friday? Is it now clear that that was indeed a young man who had come out of Syria through Greece as part of the big wave of migration into Europe, Ryan?
Well, it does seem clear that this man did enter the EU via Greece, but it's not clear whether that passport was fake or real at this point. It's not clear whether he was European born and bred or, in fact, someone who had just recently come from the Middle East. So I think that is a little bit of a red herring at this point in the discussion, to be honest, because we've already seen that there's a number of very European born and bred people who were involved in the attacks, including from the city where I live, Brussels.
Leonard Doyle, what do you see coming? Do you imagine that the flow into Europe will be stopped?
Well, I think definitely this is going to boost those on the security side of the equation, which is important in one respect, but most unfortunate, because as your guest just mentioned, Syria is awash with terrorists who've come homegrown from Europe. One possibly shows up on the list, and a couple of others have been picked up over the last couple of months. But I think As a result of that, to punish the people who are actually fleeing terrorism would be outrageous. It would be akin to some of the awful things that happened in World War II when countries turned their back on Jewish people fleeing the Holocaust. I mean, this is just unconscionable.
We just heard an American congressman, I don't know if you heard him from Geneva, Mr. Doyle, saying, you know, if these are sort of the reasonable folks who we should welcome in our company, we need them to stay home and be reasonable in opposition to all the chaos in Syria. We need someone left there who would establish a peaceful, moderate Syria. If they all leave, that hope is lost. What do you say to that?
Well, I think frankly that's ill-informed. I mean, people are leaving. They've stayed as long as they possibly could. People typically don't like to leave their home and go on the road. Nobody wants to do that. They're leaving because they see what ISIS is doing to communities around them. They see people being chucked out of buildings. They see people being beheaded, and they see the appalling tragedy that's befalling Syria. And they're leaving because they have to. So the idea that they would stay and somehow become victims just so that someone would be around to rebuild the country, well, that just doesn't make sense. We have lots of examples of countries where people flee to the neighboring countries and then return in good time to rebuild the country.
Leonard Doyle, Ryan Heath, we have callers for the two of you in Europe. Ronan in Lowell, Massachusetts. Ronan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering about what's the comparison between how well we're checking the incoming migrants versus how well they're coming across the borders at their first crossing in Europe. I mean, are we? And we're only taking 100,000 compared to the what 5 million that are currently leaving.
No, we have 10,000 so far. That's the goal in the next year or so. Europe has taken about 500,000 in this latest chapter. But let's look at the difference in vetting. Ryan Heath, it seems as though in this rather large inflow over the summer and since, the vetting has been very light in Greece, in the Balkans, and elsewhere.
I think it has been haphazard. That's probably the minimum that we can say, and it could well be as bad as you suggest, but I haven't witnessed it myself, so I'm a bit reluctant to go all in on that assessment. But what is clear is that a lot of the people arriving are told to resist being fingerprinted and to be processed because they have some legitimate reason to fear authorities that are trying to corral them or lock them up in a particular space, even if it is for their own safety and well-being. So it becomes very difficult. I've heard reports of the border guards, you know, sometimes it can take six of them to restrain or to calm down somebody enough to have them fingerprinted and processed. And given the numbers arriving, it's clearly not feasible to suddenly land some enormous squad on an island where it's six officers to one person arriving just to get a fingerprint and to find out more about this person who often isn't traveling with the full documentation, who might themselves be suffering some form of shock or disorder. So it's a very messy, difficult situation. So in that context, it really isn't surprising if a few criminals do get through.
Leonard Doyle, it has looked at times as though there was almost no screening as the flow came into Europe. Can you compare what's actually been happening there with what the American process for refugee admission? Are you on top of that?
Well, I mean, the American process for refugee admission is incredibly strict and time-consuming, and oftentimes it seems even
years
overly time-consuming, and people indeed suffer as a result of that. But there's a very good reason for it. It's to ensure that the that nobody gets through who's a threat to the security. In the case of the Europeans, I mean, what I think is the case is that because they've not had their house in order and not had agreement among them in a fair distribution of refugees and migrants, this has led to countries, including the frontline countries, if you like, Greece and Italy, simply waving people through and not processing them, not fingerprinting them. And now they're kind of reaping they're reaping the cost of that, and they're suddenly stepping up to the plate and starting to fingerprint properly, because they recognize that if you don't have a track of the people in your country, this is far more dangerous than anything. You need to know where people are so that you can at least track them down and find them. I think that's one of the lessons we've learned from Paris, and the Italians in particular, who've been very reluctant to fingerprint, are now doing so.
Here was French President François Hollande. Of course, he talked with the joint session of Parliament at Versailles yesterday, the act of war speech, but said, look, these refugees are victims of the same terrorism that France is fighting.
The question of the refugees is directly linked with the war in Syria and in Iraq. The inhabitants of those countries, notably those who come from the areas under the control of Daesh, have experienced martyrdom and are fleeing. They are the victims of the same terrorist system.
French President François Hollande there. Charles is calling from Alpine, Texas. Charles, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. As a fifth-generation Texan, I would like to back up Ted Cruz's proposal to increase screening on anyone coming to a new area or country, especially in consideration of the scourge of Ted Cruz from Canada. There's a rich history here in Texas of people from Pennsylvania, like Patrick, the Bush family from Connecticut coming and really just putting us in a bad position worldwide and really threatening our national security, I believe.
So you want to screen the Bushes and the Cruises when you set up your checkpoints. Charles, we've got it. A little tongue-in-cheek. I don't know how far there, but I appreciate your call. One more. Mohammed is calling from Lincoln, Nebraska. Mohammed, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. I have three short points I would like to address, if you please give me a time. I understand very well how they are feeling. I mean, the refugees in Middle East. I was one of the people who had been displaced, and luckily, I granted my special immigration visa here in the United States. This point.
What's your home country? What's your home country, Mohammed?
I'm from Iraq.
Okay.
I'm from south of Iraq.
Okay.
I was working with U.S. Army as an interpreter.
So, what should happen now with the Syrians?
What happened now with the Syrians that we, as in America, we should not focus on them as based on their religion or their races. This one point. The other point, we need to be carefully examine them. Majority of them was under the ISIS authority. And in one time, during last 3 months, the waves of refugees started to go and seeking refuge in Europe. What does that mean? That means the Turkish government gave them a grant or the green light to cross the border toward Greece. And during the last 3 years, they haven't given that chance to anyone. That is put many questions on that event.
Mohammed, let me pick it up right there, if I may, and I appreciate your call from Nebraska. Ryan Heath, Leonard Doyle, please stand by there in Brussels and in Geneva. Will McCants joins us right now from Washington. He's a fellow in the Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution, director of the Project on U.S. Relations with the Islamic World, author of The ISIS Apocalypse, the History, Strategy, Doomsday Vision of the Islamic State. Will McCants, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Mohammed asserts there that the majority of refugees coming out of Syria have lived under ISIS authority. That is not my impression that the majority have. What about where these people are coming from and who or what the authority they've been under?
Yeah, the caller is incorrect. Most of these people are coming from areas either under regime control or in some of the cities that the regime has been bombing, and they're escaping the violence. Some of them may fear ISIS aggression, but the vast majority of them have not lived under ISIS rule. ISIS does not allow its inhabitants to travel freely.
What do you think on the European front? looking at this strategically, is Europe likely to close its doors? You've got humanitarian considerations. You've got terrorism/security considerations. And then strategic issues about what happens if this flow is cut off. What does it mean for Turkey and Jordan, putative allies? What does it mean for Syria itself? How do you expect on strategic grounds Europe will lean?
Well, it sounds like it's leaning towards closure, which would be unfortunate, but I understand the dilemma that the politicians are in over there. They have a far right that is going to be very excised by what has happened in Paris and put a great deal of pressure on their political leaders to get much tougher on immigration. We would not be having the problem to this extent, of course, if the civil war were brought to a close, but also if nations lived up to their pledges for refugee camps in the region. Turkey, Lebanon, and Jordan have taken in hundreds of thousands of people, and the United States and its allies and the Gulf regional partners have not lived up to their pledges for the most part, which is a big reason why a lot of these refugees are beginning to go into Europe.
And what about, we had Congressman Farenthold from Texas on saying, leave them there so they'll constitute a moderate population that can stabilize this country at some point. Does that make sense to you or not?
Well, they're not going to stay regardless of whether you want to leave them there or not. They're going to try and get out. The violence is off the charts in Syria. This is the worst misplacement of people in the Middle East that we've seen for decades, perhaps in the last century. They're going to try and leave. The best solution, I think, would be to invest heavily in the camps and the infrastructure that surround Syria to handle the refugees. And we may have to give that a much more serious look now if the Europeans decide to close down their borders.
Leonard Doyle, what's the appeal you would make to European leaders if they were before you right now on policy on this front with this flow?
Well, we had this very important debate and summit last week in Malta in which it came to the fore, the whole issue of deportations. The Europeans know that they have to accept the Syrians, those who are eligible to asylum, for asylum, and those from countries that are deemed eligible. But there's a big push to throw out, to deport all of those they deem to be economic migrants. And we've been very concerned about that because that number includes, you know, pregnant women, unaccompanied minors, people who've been trafficked, all sorts of vulnerable people. And we reached a historic agreement last week when 60 heads of state from Africa and the European Union agreed that they would put a preference on, if you're returning people, it must be voluntary. They must want to go back by their own will. Now, we fear that that's going to be undone by the push to a secure state, because the Europeans were not very happy with the agreement. They were basically cajoled into it by the Africans. And we think that will be the high water mark, is the danger. And that what we're going to see from now on is a much, much tougher approach to migration, in particular to refugees.
Ryan Heath, is Germany showing its hand yet? Merkel's openness to refugees has been very, very influential in the whole EU's stance so far. Is Germany wavering?
Germany is retracting rather than wavering, I would say. Merkel really has taken a hit politically. Her chancellorship is not really directly under threat, but it's destabilized to the point where if she made another major wrong move, then people really would start asking serious questions about her future. So you've also seen a division between her more moderate, larger party and the Bavarian coalition partner that she's involved in. So she's had to wind back a little bit to keep that coalition partner happy. She's also had to be more cautious to make sure her own leadership isn't threatened overall. And so that's why you've seen this sort of to-ing and fro-ing, if not outright backflipping on the issue. But I think the fundamental core of the policy remains, and then the biggest challenge remains ahead, which is the integration of the refugees. But you're definitely seeing a sort of a curtailing of the generosity.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Syria's refugees after the Paris attacks, where they'll go, where they won't, and what is the right thing to do here. What do you think about Europe and what it should do, the U.S., and what it should do at a much smaller scale? And still, it's a hot issue right now. Are Ted Cruz and Jeb Bush right? Just take the Christians? Is that, as the president says, shameful? Brian Heath is with us from Brussels, senior EU correspondent for Politico Europe. Leonard Doyle is with us from Geneva, Switzerland, spokesperson there for the IOM, the International Organization of Migration. Will McCants is with us from the Center for Middle East Policy at Brookings, author of The ISIS Apocalypse. Here's the president in Turkey yesterday praising countries that are still accepting refugees, even though it's been tough, saying the U.S. should follow their example.
The fact that they've kept their borders open to these refugees is a signal of their belief in a common humanity. And so we have to, each of us, do our part. And the United States has to step up and do its part.
But a whole lot of American governors, about half now, including a Democrat in New Hampshire, saying, "Way, hold up here, some just saying no." Here's Texas Governor Greg Abbott on Laura Ingraham's radio show yesterday, Republican, saying, "Oh, we've got all kinds of vulnerability here.
We don't know who these people are, what they're doing, but we do know they are coming from a nation or a state that is connected with terrorism, posing very real danger to the people in this state and in this country." And I sent a letter to the president, and I said, "Neither you nor any federal official can guarantee that Syrian refugees will not be part of any terroristic activity."
Europe has taken about 500,000 in this latest stream. U.S. looking at taking 10,000 in the year and some ahead. Saturday night in Iowa, Hillary Clinton at the Democrats' debate saying 10,000, not enough.
The administration originally said 10. I said we should go to 65, but only if we have as careful a screening and vetting process as we can imagine, whatever resources it takes.
65,000, says Hillary Clinton, but with a big Hillary butt there about very careful screening. John in Minneapolis, Minnesota. John, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. The reason for this mass migration into Europe is because of Obama pulling out of Iraq, and George Bush said in his speech that in 2007 that this would happen. If you Google it up, you'll see it right there. But we need stronger immigration. We should enforce the immigration laws that we have on the books, not ignore them like the commander-in-chief has been.
But this isn't ignoring. This, we take refugees. We've taken them for a long time. Does it move your heart at all when you see those families in the surf?
Well, sort of. Yeah, I guess it does. But we, I think we should leave them in Syria and set up some camps up there and vet these people before they flood them into Europe, where we have no control of what's going on.
John, I appreciate your call from Minneapolis. One right here from Nashville. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to offer what I think is a relevant reminder that we have majority ownership of this problem. If not exclusive ownership of it, as a result of
not Assad, not ISIS, not all the, you know, how rough it's been in the Middle East.
Assad is a problem that would have been dealt with differently had we not been responsible for the allowance of the creation of ISIS in the first place. I mean, if you go back to 2003 and some of the decisions that were made initially in Iraq once we were there, Paul Bremer's release of hundreds of thousands of armed soldiers from Saddam Hussein's army, who became, to a great extent, a lot of the cooperatives in ISIS at this point. We have a huge responsibility here.
What about the security challenge? Do you see a security challenge, Jim, for Europe, for the U.S. and these refugees?
Well, clearly there is one, and I don't think there's any denying that or any getting around it. I mean, we can vet and vet and vet and do the best we can on that. That's what we obviously will do if that comes to pass. I'm not so sure I dislike the idea of more regional, local camps that we could take responsibility and cover the expense of. We've gotten very good at that in 14 years of military presence in the Middle East. We have the contractors to create livable, humane conditions for people.
So own it one way or the other. Maybe own it there, you say, Jim, and we've got it one more, and I'll take it to our guest, Dearborn, Michigan. Plenty of folks from this region there. Mike, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just want to point out just correct a statement for your guest that a lot of the people that are refugees right now that are flooding to Europe were under the control of ISIS, not the regime. Because the regime does not cut heads, does not burn people, does not stomp on people with tanks. ISIS do that. That's why people run away from them.
Well, I mean, I just have to flat out disagree with you on that, Mike. I've seen the barrel bombing. We saw the chlorine attacks and even chemical attacks. I mean, the Assad regime, I'm not sticking up for ISIS, but the Assad regime has been absolutely brutal on its own people.
I'm not defending the Assad regime. The Assad regime, they make their own mistakes, but at the same time, let's state the facts. A lot of these people are running from ISIS. Again, the point is, six of those people that did the terrorist attack in Europe, they were born in Europe. Okay, what happened? We in 2010, the European people, they allowed, through Turkey, they allowed thousands and thousands and thousands of people to cross over to Syria to fight the regime. We gave them weapons. The United States gave weapons to those rebels, but the rebels, they turned around and they became ISIS. And the weapons that we gave to the rebels to fight the Syrian regime with now are in the hand of ISIS. So we created that monster. That's one. Two, I mean, the irony is at the G20 summit, thousands and thousands of people were across the border through Turkey, and Turkey is saying, oh, we're against the terrorist attacks. If you are against the terrorist attacks in Paris, okay, then stop supporting these terrorists and stop giving them weapons and stop letting them cross the border.
Mike, we've got it. Let me take it to my European guest here, Ryan Heath. First, to this question of the number of those who were involved in the attacks in Paris who were actually European-born. And Mike says, look, when France wanted Assad out, they sort of turned a blind eye to their own citizens who were headed to Syria to fight him. And now if that they've got blowback and... how surprised you can be. Many native-born, and some, even the one who's supposedly, the passport was found, was originally from Europe, was he not?
Well, there's some, yes, and there are some dirty secrets involved in this discussion, where the reality is that I think quite a few people in the diplomatic and the intelligence communities in Europe were actually, in a way, relieved that ISIS developed in what they thought was the original form of ISIS. They thought ISIS was an inward-looking caliphate. They did not imagine that this would blow back into European territory when it first rose up. So the idea that people who wanted to be jihadis were actually leaving European soil and going very often quickly to their death in the Middle East was, you know, a secret, dirty secret release to a lot of these people in these communities. And now that ISIS has developed the capability to potentially take out airplanes, to hit two cities in the space of a week in multiple coordinated attacks, they're having to rethink that situation. But the truth of the matter is a lot of these problems are homegrown, disaffected youth. And in the case of Belgium, where we're from, there's multiple layers of government that clearly haven't been taking enough responsibility to manage the problems that are developing in their community. And, you know, the time for turning the blind eye has now run out, now that attack after attack or plot after plot is traced back to these parts of Brussels, where people are very easily able to disguise themselves. Around 62% of people in Brussels were born outside of Belgium, including myself. It's a place where newcomers can blend in easily. And when you aren't very, very joined up in your governance and your enforcement, then it's obvious that problems can occur. So these aren't imported problems. You know, they might have been problems that were transformed when these young people went and were trained in the Middle East, but they're not often people originating from the Middle East.
Will McCants, what about the focus now on refugees and inflows rather than people who are in Europe? Is that I don't know, just sort of nationalistic knee-jerk? Or does it make sense? Because if ISIS is in fact now looking to reach out and hit, and the impression we're getting is that they may have rather carefully directed what just happened in Paris, then are those who come out of Syria more dangerous?
They are more dangerous, and ISIS is actually a proto-state. It has a very large war chest that some people estimate between $1 and $2 billion, so they have a lot of money to put behind these attacks. But if I can offer a different perspective on how security officials in in Europe were feeling in the early days of the Civil War, when I spoke to them in late 2012, early 2013 for some research I was doing, their hair was on fire. They were terrified of their citizens going abroad to join ISIS and the other jihadist groups and coming back home, to such an extent that I, as a researcher, thought they were overdoing it a little bit. So I don't share your other guest's perspective. I saw a great deal of concern, early concern, among security officials.
Interesting. Omaha, Nebraska. Brandon, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just want to bring about the perspective that refugees go through a lot. In Omaha, Nebraska, we have a lot of Sudanese refugees, and a refugee camp is not a fun place to be. Some are there for 10 to 20 years. So I just wanted to bring about that perspective when it comes to the refugees. Thank you.
You're welcome, Brendan. I appreciate your call. Sylvia, Cambridge, Massachusetts. Sylvia, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say I'm a former South Texas resident and a Texas representative that was on earlier, and Ted Cruz and Jeb Bush. Every time I hear them say something about the Syrian refugees not having a place in the U.S., I think about that this country was founded on immigrants. And I myself am a second-generation immigrant, and I feel that sort of the elephant in the room is Islamophobia, really. And I guess that's all I wanted to say.
Sylvia, I appreciate your call. Here was Jeb Bush. This was on CBS This Morning, talking about how special consideration should be given to Christians fleeing Syria.
We should focus on creating safe havens for refugees in Syria rather than bringing them all the way across to the United States. But I do think there is a special important need to make sure that Christians from Syria are being protected, because they're being slaughtered in the country. And but for us, who? Who would take care of the number of Christians that right now are completely displaced?
Will McCants, how do you look at the claims being made about Christians in Syria and special needs or exemptions for them?
Look, I mean, Jeb is right that Christians are being targeted in Syria, but so are a vast number of Muslims. Most of the attacks that ISIS or the Assad regime is carrying out are directed against other Muslims. And it's worth your listeners knowing that ISIS wants us to hate refugees. It was very jealous.
Why?
Early in the crisis, when Germany announced that it was going to take in so many, because ISIS is trying to do its own state building. It claims to offer a safe haven to all Muslims. It wants refugees to immigrate to its state, and it was furious that refugees were making the decision to go to Europe because of its freedoms and greater degree of tolerance. If we are thinking about this as part of a broader ideological war against ISIS, it does not help our case that we are beginning to turn away refugees, particularly because they belong to one certain faith.
Wait a minute. You're saying if Europe closes the doors on refugees, United States too, then is that likely that they would then turn and go into ISIS-controlled territory? We have the impression that that's the last place on earth people would want to go.
No, they're not going to go. They're not crazy. That's why they're going to Europe in the first place. But in this war of words that ISIS is fighting with the West, it's one of their major talking points.
What happens? What are the implications strategically if Europe, in particular, with its large intake recently, should shut that down substantially? What would that mean for ISIS, for the region, strategically, Will?
Well, I mean, you have this large number of refugees that numbers in the millions that can destabilize much of the region. It has to be carefully managed, and that's why I think more investment has to go to the camps in the region. I am all for resettling people in Europe and the United States, but if it becomes politically unfeasible, I think we have to double down on our investment in the infrastructure in the Middle East, because these refugee crises in the Middle East have a long tail. I mean, just look at the refugee crisis after the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948. It is still with us today and a severe political agitant.
Ryan Heath, how do you see European leaders, again, thinking about the implications? There's the immediate humanitarian challenge here. There's also a big game of chess being played strategically. If this flow is slowed or stopped, how are the implications being read in Europe?
It's a multi-layered problem, and things are starting to unravel. Everything that has been agreed took a long time to agree. It really wasn't on a scale necessary to fully deal with the problem, not on a humanitarian immediate level and not on the long-term level of where do you house and how do you integrate these people. And virtually none of those agreements are being fully put in place. We're seeing absolute dribbles of humanitarian assistance in terms of, you know, dozens of tents arriving rather than tens of thousands of tents arriving in places like Slovenia and Croatia. We're seeing hundreds of asylum seekers and refugees relocated under a scheme that is supposed to relocate 160,000. And then, of course, the reality is that millions have either arrived or are on their way over the course of this year and next year. So
the political response has just not been up to the scale of the problem, and it's only likely to get worse with, for example, the regional elections in France in early December. It's highly likely that Marine Le Pen will do well now at that. You've seen the election of a very hardline Polish government. So I think it's just going to be an ongoing political problem for months and years to come.
Leonard Doyle, maybe every time there's a crisis, people think it's unmanageable and they can't take the refugees. Think about the Jews in World War II with nowhere to go. But is this one different somehow? Is there a different sort of security threat embedded in this refugee flow? Or from your perch, does it look like refugees always look, Leonard?
I think undoubtedly at this time, this is really rattling Europe to the core, and we're seeing that in the concerns of the migration ministries to get people out as quickly as possible, to return them, those who are not refugees. So I think there's no question but the politicians are really terrified by what's going on, and resettlement is always going to be a very tiny number of people relative to the problem.
Europe rattled to the core, talk of closing the open borders that have been the hallmark of the EU and the United States, even across an ocean, looking perhaps unwilling or certainly reluctant in half the states now, governors, to just take that small 10,000, small compared to Europe's inflow. Leonard Doyle at the International Organization of Migration in Geneva, Switzerland, you've been very kind to be with us today, and we're grateful. Thank you for your insight.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Ryan Heath at Politico Europe in Brussels. Ryan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom.
And Will McCants, author of The ISIS Apocalypse. Will, thanks for joining us from Washington.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.